progress is reportedly being made in the Chicago teachers' strike. Mitt Romney criticizes President Obama for his response to the embassy attacks. And more citations handed down to protesters at the state capitol. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, September 14th. We will discuss these issues and more during this edition of The Week in Review. And if you have an issue you would like us to talk about, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have with us two guests from different perspectives. Matt Rothschild, publisher of the Progressive magazine, is with us. Its website is progressive.org. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Joy, how are you?
I'm great. And David Blask is here, too, former Dane County Supervisor. His Bring It blog can be found at ibwisconsin.com. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I'm even greater than Matt.
Because of, why do you say that?
Because I'm of who I am.
You're even greater. Okay. Let's.
We'll arm wrestle later. That's
you know what? Right. One thing that Matt has on you, David, is that Matt was arrested at the state capitol some time ago. And since we wanted to, we had just in the newscast just before we went on the air, we heard about the latest in the crackdown on protesters at the state capitol. We have people being arrested for holding signs without a permit, and now we have Capitol Police going to people's homes and issuing them citations for violations of the rules regarding protest at the state capitol. Matt, what's going on here?
Well, there's a new Capitol Police Chief, and he's much different than the last Capitol Police Chief, Chief Tubbs, who took much more of a community policing approach and a hands-off approach and a conciliatory approach. And he respected our rights to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly that are guaranteed not only under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, but Article 1, Section 4 of the Wisconsin Constitution. And there's been a change of policy now. The new chief of police, and I imagine with the agreement of or the encouragement of the Walker administration, has decided that they're not going to tolerate these kinds of gatherings anymore. They're hostile to free speech and free assembly in our capital, and they're cracking down in a ludicrous way. They're handing out citations, actually handcuffing people for holding signs that are quoting from Article 1, Section 4 of the Wisconsin State Constitution that guarantees our right to petition our government and assemble peacefully in the capital. And so this is an outrageous attack on our rights here, and I have to say the people who have been protesting in the Capitol, really they are defenders of free speech and free assembly and our fundamental rights, and they've been doing it for the last year and a half or more. There are a couple hundred people who show up when there are times of crisis, and a steady group of several dozen who are there virtually every day. And I just have the most respect for these people. Yeah, decent people have just done a tremendous job in standing up for our rights. And why we don't have these rights, I mean, these are our rights as American citizens and Wisconsin citizens. And I think more people should come down to the Capitol and defend our free speech and free assembly rights.
I alluded to your arrest. That wasn't in this current wave.
No, I was arrested back in the fall for doing the terrible thing of taking a picture with my cell phone of other people taking pictures of the state assembly from the state assembly gallery. They weren't allowing us to take pictures up there. And again, I was taking pictures of people holding signs for free speech.
Yeah.
And so this is a free speech issue. And I went down there a couple times in the last couple of weeks, including earlier this week, holding a sign that says, "I am not a terrorist." And the reason I held that sign was because Chief Irwin, David Irwin, the new police chief, said that the protesters in the Capitol, these defenders of free speech, are terrorists, for lack of a better word. Now, that was an outrageous thing for him to say, especially, you know, on the eve of 9/11. It was ridiculous.
Well, David Blaska, isn't this ridiculous?
Yeah, it is. And I just would tell Chief Irwin, I know where Matt Rothschild is right now, and he's on the seventh floor here in the communications building. So if you want to come and arrest him, he's here. I'll hold him here. You know, I had my own sing along last year to counter the Solidarity Singers, because they have commandeered the Capitol Rotunda, the Capitol that belongs to all of us, the very center of the Capitol, very center, for months and months, and actually a couple of years now, they've commandeered that public space and taken it as their own. They had a they were even doing their sing-along during a blood drive, making it difficult for the nurses to communicate with the patients. I had a sing-along last year. I got a permit. And some of the folks, some of Matt's friends said, Blaskill, what are you trying to do, cause trouble? I said, why would there be trouble? I've got a permit. Why would that not be recognized? And it was easy to get. I simply said, I'm Dave Blaska. I'm responsible. We're going to have, I think, maybe 50 to 100 people there so they can plan for that, for the safety and whatnot, and it doesn't conflict with anyone else's planned use. Look, I could come down there, you know, demonstrate for and make signs for my bagel shop, you know, or my lawn care service. Matt wants everybody to come down. You know, we had that kind of chaos last February of 2011. You know, Joy, it's a well-established principle in law that speech is free in our country, but you can make reasonable regulations as to time, place, and manner, and that's all that's being done here. Get the permit.
Yeah, what's the big deal about getting a permit, Matt?
Well, I don't think we should ask the government. We need to ask the government for permission to express ourselves and to petition the government for redress of grievances. I just don't believe that's what freedom means, that you have to go ask pretty please to do what is your right enshrined by the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Wisconsin. And look, at when David says commandeer, I mean, that connotes, and he's a wordsmith. He knows these connotations connotes by force, and obviously these protesters are nonviolent and didn't commandeer it by force. And no, when school classes come to the Capitol and they want to assemble at noontime, the singers have gone outside and have been respectful of that. The blood drive he raises, you know, I was there when the Red Cross was doing his blood drive. There was no interference with the Red Cross doing the blood drive. In fact, a lot of the protesters and defenders of free speech, including people who got arrested, gave blood. So.
But their free speech, Matt, is denying others their free speech.
No, they weren't denying anyone free
speech. And I say commandeering. I don't. You know, you don't have to have mace and armed knuckles. But the fact of the matter is that they're there. They take over that space.
Let me ask you, though. Some of the people arrested at that blood drive were holding up a sign, just holding up a little piece of paper that said, I heart Red Cross.
Right. And I understand that, you know, you get down to particulars. You know, we've had craziness here, and where you draw the line is always a problem, and Matt and his friends will always find a place to try to test that line. But taking pictures, for instance, from the gallery, that's not allowed in the nation's capital. In fact, there's no demonstrations at all allowed in the nation's capital. Permit, you can't get a permit. They won't give you one.
You have any trouble at all about the Capitol Police videotaping or, I don't know if they're always videotaping, but then picking out people, going after the leaders and going to their homes?
Because I don't know that they can arrest everyone. I mean, it's like if you're on the interstate and you're speeding, they probably would like to arrest each and every one, but sometimes you have to arrest the one that's going the fastest.
But it's okay to go to their home and give them a citation?
Well, I think that's allowed. And is this a public place, the Capitol Rotunda, and they're objecting to being videotaped? I hope not. In fact, if you want to make a special statement here, and Matt, I know it's a badge of honor to get arrested, at least in your circles, I'm sure you're proud of it, and that's fine. Do you mind being videotaped, or is that a problem?
Well, I think it is offensive and should be offensive to Americans who respect their own liberties to just be videotaped when they're exercising their free speech rights. It used to be that the police couldn't videotape you under the U.S. Justice Department rules unless they had significant evidence that you were committing a crime. And now the police, you know, they videotape you in the street. They videotape you all over the place with no predicate here. And that's, I think, an unfortunate slide down the hill away from our freedoms. And, you know, that they're videotaping you in the Capitol for holding a sign that quotes from the state constitution defending your right to assemble and to speak, I think is ludicrous. I also think it is extremely offensive then that the police are going to go to people's homes and arrest them for holding a sign, for God's sakes. Don't they have something better to do? Or even worse, to go to their place of work. And that is intimidating. It gives the person, the employee, the idea that maybe their job's at stake for simply holding their sign, because if their boss doesn't like what they're doing, maybe they'll get fired. And is this the kind of fear that we need to be living under in the state of Wisconsin?
David, you wanted to say?
Well, only, Matt, you know, if you're holding up a sign, I presume you want it to be seen. So you know, and you're trying to make a statement. And also, you've been an advocate in your long and proud history, and the magazine that you edit, the Progressive, has been an advocate of civil disobedience, particularly when it advances liberal and progressive causes. Is that correct? I mean, that's not a bit.
Yeah, I mean, we had 200.
So you don't object to being arrested?
No, arrest us in the Capitol. We had 200 people in the Capitol earlier this week that were perfectly willing to get arrested.
Yeah,
and the police didn't want to arrest us there. You know, instead, they want to go to your home when no one's there to support you. They want to go to your workplace where your boss can fire you.
Let's take a call from Owen in De Pere on this issue. Hello, Owen.
Well, good morning, and thank you. I think one of the key words might be peaceful in terms of organizing, and I think the desecration of the Capitol's marble with the $250,000+ repair should have either been more closely watched, or maybe a permit there and the payment of that by those peaceful protesters might have got more attention.
All right, so Owen says, you know, that these protesters and their signs can cause damage at the Capitol, Matt, so that's why we have this enforcement of this newish policy.
Well, if Owen wants to say that it's not peaceful to put a piece of tape on a pillar, a sign that is quoting from the state constitution, then I have a real problem with that. This is an old canard by the right wing nationally and in Wisconsin that the protesters just did so much damage to the Capitol. I mean, the amazing thinking about this tremendous historic protest in February and March of 2011, where we had more than 100,000 people out in the streets of Madison on subsequent weekends and tens of thousands in the streets every day, and then people camping out in the Capitol for 2 weeks, was that there was no violence and was just a tremendously nonviolent event. And, you know, the right wing used to say it cost $7 million. That was the figure that was thrown out there. And obviously it was a tiny amount compared to
that. I just want to just you know, because we're going to wrap this up a little bit. But, Matt, I will venture to say that if the Tea Party had done half of what you guys did, you would be so outraged.
I'm not outraged by speech, David.
You know, there was a story this week that the Department of Administration installed 482 security buttons around the state capitol. Apparently, they were installed at $103,000 per button. The idea was to be able to allow people to send an alert to the Capitol Police, who could then respond immediately if someone was threatened. What do you think of that?
You know, those are called panic buttons, and you know, it's I'm familiar with those, having been in state government a little bit. If you're in a sensitive place and in a sensitive spot. And, Matt, that's part of the problem. What your folks did, and you know, maybe the Solidarity Singers, I've met some of them, they actually were quite gracious. I'll say this for the record. When we came in, they did give way because we did have a permit. But they've unleashed a feeling in the Capitol, which I've never seen before, and I've been around too long, where you've got a regular cadre of people who think that they're also advancing the cause of liberalism and progressivism and using their free speech by intimidating legislators and their staff, literally chasing them around the room and back to their office, shouting them down, disrupting democratically elected representatives' ability to conduct a hearing so they can hear from everyone. But there are certain people that can't be heard from. There are certain people that can't, and they get targeted. And that is a fact of life. And it's and these panic buttons aren't coming just because Chief David Irwin is paranoid. It's because the staffers, the people working in that Capitol, want them.
And I misspoke. It's $103,000 total, not per panic button.
Yeah, that would be an expensive panic button. But I'm glad that David recognizes that the chief is paranoid. For one. Number two, if any state legislator feels the need to have a panic button, I've got nothing against them having a panic button in
there. Why would they want a panic button, though?
But
why this demand?
Well, this
for
is
panic
a question.
Why this demand?
Well,
it has nothing to do with Chief Irwin. It started before that. Why the demand for panic buttons?
Well, I saw one incident where, first of all, there's been no incident where any staffer or any legislator was assaulted.
Are they paranoid then? Is that what you're saying? These staffers are paranoid.
I think they are over emphasizing the risk here. But look at
but any risk, they're there daily.
If they feel they're at risk, give them a panic button. No problem there. But look at,
they do feel they're at risk.
I do think, and so they should have it. But if an elected official is walking through the Capitol and a citizen is in the Capitol, that citizen has all the right in the world to ask that politician a question.
But that's not what's happening, man. No. You know that. They're shouting at that legislator. They're hounding him. They're hectoring him. And that, and we saw that on videotape with State Senator Grothman. They literally had to be rescued from an angry mob.
Let me hold you both here. We need to move on, as this is the Week in Review, and we need to cover all of the top state, national, and international news of the week. We are talking with Matt Rothschild and David Blaska. They are discussing and debating the issues in the news this week, and we will welcome the topics you would like them to talk about at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news. After 4 o'clock, you can call in to talk about what you think the week's most significant news story was during your views on the news during At Issue with Ben Marins after 4 o'clock. This is our regular Friday Week in Review, talking today with Matt Rothschild and David Blaska about the top news stories of the week. Looks like the head of the Chicago Teachers Union says that she is optimistic that a contract, a deal, can be reached, perhaps by this weekend, very soon anyway, and that Chicago teachers may be back in the classroom soon. Let's get you both to react to the Chicago Teachers Union strike. We had 29,000 teachers on strike starting on Monday. This is the nation's third largest school district. A lot of the strike was over issues like teacher evaluations based on standardized tests. The teachers objected. The mayor wanted. David Blaska, what's your take on the Chicago Teachers Union strike?
Well, you know, it illustrates coming so quickly, I think, after what we just talked about in Wisconsin here. Wall Street Journal had a great editorial this past week, and it said, Rahm Emanuel, meet Scott Walker. And if Rahm Emanuel wanted to stop this strike, what he ought to do is say, I'm going to Madison, get the WGN, WBBN cameras, follow him up here, have him being greeted warmly outside the governor's office by Wisconsin's chief executive himself, and then they disappear in his room to get a few pointers. Rahm Emanuel is a bully. The chief of staff, that's what the teachers union called him, the former chief of staff to the one, the hope, Barack Obama. It just shows you what a disconnect our teachers unions have. And let's understand something. It's never about the kids. This is a job security thing. It is in every teachers union. Jobs first, members first, the kids don't pay dues. And anything else is secondary.
You don't think the teachers care about the kids?
I think they care about the kids, but that's not why they're doing this. They care about their jobs because Rahm Emanuel wants to get rid of the worst teachers. Look, you've got a graduation rate in Chicago of something like 46%, or maybe it's the other way. It's 54%. 54% of the kids in Chicago graduate. You've got a math and language proficiency of something like 83% are not basically not meeting grade. Especially in our nation's largest cities, we've been producing legions of unemployable people in an information age. Public education is so destroyed now that Hollywood is starting to pick up on it. We had Waiting for Superman with Davis Guggenheim, who did the PowerPoint show for Al Gore on the global warming. We've got another movie out now with Maggie Gyllenhaal and Viola Davis, who appeared in the Help movie, about parents taking over their schools. But the teachers union doesn't want charters. They don't want any kind of they don't want any threat to their monopoly.
All right, Matt, your take.
Well, I'm 180 degrees here from David on this one. Look, if you want to solve the problem of test scores and grades in our urban schools, why don't we end poverty? 85% of the kids in the Chicago schools are in poverty. A lot of these kids come to class after having seen terrible violence or being homeless or being hungry. And it's awfully hard to learn that way. It's awfully hard to learn in a classroom of 35 to 40 people. It's awfully hard to learn in Chicago in late August and early September and late May and early June in a classroom with no air conditioning. The teachers were talking about all these issues. A lot of these schools don't have libraries. A lot of the schools don't have playgrounds. A lot of the schools don't have school nurses or art or music. And what we have here with Rahm Emanuel is the recognition of the bipartisan attack on public education in this country. Because what Rahm Emanuel is doing in Chicago is the same thing that Arne Duncan, the education secretary who used to run the schools in Chicago, now Obama's education secretary, has been proposing, and what George W. Bush proposed and what Obama himself proposed. I mean, Obama's race to the top is no different, essentially, than No Child Left Behind by George W. Bush.
Sooner or later, I think you'd start to get the message. You could also mention Joel Klein, the former chancellor of the New York City schools. You could go on, Howard Fuller in Milwaukee, on and on. Jeffrey Canada, Colleen Kerr here in Madison, on and on and on. And by the way, I didn't name a single Republican.
And what is the message? The message is we're going to dull our kids and prepare them for dull work. That's what we're going to do. We're going to drill them and drill them and drill them on the standardized testing and not excite them about the prospects of learning.
Hang on, though, Matt. You know, work would be an improvement. You started off your little diatribe there by saying we've got to, how about we end poverty? You know what? LBJ thought about that 40 years ago, and he declared war on poverty, and poverty won. Here's how you destroy and end poverty: education. Make the people employable. And I'll tell you what, you know, we actually have something like, I think in Wisconsin, something like 36,000 jobs have gone wanting, particularly in manufacturing and particularly in such fields as welding. You know what? That's a good living. You can raise a family on that.
Let me take a call from Dave in Madison. Hello, Dave.
Morning. I give Matt a couple of pointers. There's a place called Leo High School. It's all ghetto. It's all poverty. They have a 98% graduation rate with a 95% going to college. So your excuses of poverty does not hold water. Oh, by the way, that school is not unionized. First day of the Chicago Teachers Unions, they decided they wanted to block rush hour traffic in downtown Chicago for 2 to 4 hours. For the taxpayers who pay their salaries to get home. Second day, they interrupted a 9/11 memorial, 9/11 memorial that the governor was having. And the third day, they were outside parochial schools, another schools that were non-union members, and they were yelling shame on you to the nuns. So let's put it this way: Mr. Walker's got it right, and the Mayor Emanuel's trying to emulate a little bit of what Walker is doing, but it's not holding water. The unions stink nationwide. Arne Duncan was a failure, and to bring a failure from Chicago and put him in Washington, D.C. is even a bigger failure.
Well, all right, Dave, lots to say there. Matt, do you want to respond to our caller first?
Well, I mean, the caller does not seem to respect people's right to assemble. I mean, Martin Luther King blocked traffic, too. I mean, was it wrong for him to block traffic?
He didn't block traffic for air conditioning.
Well, he blocked traffic. He blocked
for
traffic
basic for human rights.
So now,
now we're trying to teach kids.
Let Matt respond first.
I mean, this idea that you can't exercise your free speech rights, you can't engage in civil disobedience peacefully, without being it automatically something wrong that you did. I think we got to get over. The other thing I think we need to get over here, or one thing that I think this illustrates is how destructive Scott Walker's victory was for organized labor around the country. During the uprising here against Walker, I realized, and a lot of us realized, that this was an issue that was going to transcend the boundaries of Wisconsin, and surely it has. And that's why it's embarrassing to me that you have Rahm Emanuel, a so-called Democrat and Obama's former chief of staff, emulating Scott Walker. And I think this is a battle that it's going to be waged continually. We saw it here in Wisconsin. We saw it in Chicago. It's going to keep going on.
Matt, I'm sorry, but I don't. When I was educated in partly in the public schools, partly in the parochial schools. Peaceful did not include blocking traffic, where you've got maybe someone who's got to get to work or maybe get home to a sick child and you're blocking traffic. That's not peaceful. That's illegal. And you need to – but I understand your point of view. In the June 2011 edition of the Progressive magazine, you said – you called for your labor union allies – by the way, I haven't heard you mention kids yet – to make Wisconsin ungovernable, quote unquote, to make Wisconsin ungovernable. Do you still believe that that's the proper course of action?
Sure, Dave. Last time we were on, you mentioned that too. So obviously, it's a little bee in your bonnet there. But
it's in print.
I stand by it. You know, I stood by it last time. I stand by it today.
Now we know where you're coming from.
I believe in you. The right to exercise free speech, free assembly, civil disobedience, peaceful. Just because it's illegal doesn't mean it's peaceful.
But if the
that's a tautology, and it's totally false. I mean, Martin Luther King was peaceful, and he was doing things that were illegal. They're not, one.
Well, the laws he broke were bad laws. You think that blocking traffic is a bad law, that there's a law against blocking traffic? I mean, we can get down into the idiocy here, but the point of the matter is you're not making friends. It's all about the unions. You don't have a union at the Progressive magazine, so
we do have a union. I helped form the union back in 1984, and we're unionized today. It's part of the United Auto Workers. You'll be pleased to know, David.
Yeah, we will again move on to another issue. The big international story this week was the attacks on the U.S. consulate and embassies in the Middle East and in Northern Africa. In Libya, four Americans were killed, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. Matt, your reaction to the attacks and as well as the responses by President Obama and the heat that Mitt Romney is taking because of his critical reaction, saying that President Obama and the U.S. administration's reaction was wrong-headed and sent the wrong message.
Well, the attacks were vile, heinous, disgusting. My sympathies to the U.S. State Department members who died, including the U.S. ambassador. And let me just say something here also about free speech and connect the two issues we've been talking about. And that is, I want to live in a world where you can make fun of any religion, where you can make fun of any ideology, where you can make fun of any philosophy, where you can publish a book on any subject, including the satanic verses, where you can put out a film on any subject and not risk being killed or having people engage in violence. Give me mockery and don't give me death. And so I think this is a situation where we need to stand up for free speech rights, too. But as to first of all, I think President Obama and Secretary of State Clinton handled themselves really well in this terrible moment here. I saw the president give his talk the morning afterwards, and the Secretary of State, who seemed obviously shaken by it, as who wouldn't be? It was an employee of hers. There were four employees of hers, and a friend of hers, someone she's worked closely with. And I thought she handled herself with tremendous dignity, as did the president. By contrast, you had Mitt Romney issuing this premature, immature, false, and utterly unstatesmanlike statement right out of the chute here before it was clear what was going on. He didn't have the decency to wait a couple hours. He had to get out of the gate fast with some slam against the president. And had a Democrat done that when there was a Republican president, that Democrat would have been castigated and tarred and feathered as being unpatriotic.
I don't necessarily disagree, Matt, with that. I really don't. I think Mitt Romney could have waited 24, 48 hours to see what was going there. It looks like, I think what's happened a little bit is, with some of the strongmen gone, like Muammar Gaddafi and Hosni Mubarak, you've got to see a flux there and some rogue individuals, not that the Arab Street is exactly Main Street, Wisconsin, but it sounds like the Benghazi embassy was taken over by a group, and so you don't have the strongmen there to put a lid on these things. Hopefully, though, hopefully this is part of the growing pains. I don't know that this portends anything beyond what it is.
Let's take a listen to Mitt Romney and what he did say. This was actually when he doubled down on his comment.
The administration was wrong to stand by a statement sympathizing with those who had breached our embassy in Egypt instead of condemning their actions. It's never too early for the United States government to condemn attacks on Americans and to defend our values.
And let's take a call from Dave in Wanakee, who wants to talk about this. Hello, Dave.
Yes, hello. That was an interesting statement that, or restatement, I guess, in which he lied a second time when he said that the administration apologized. There was no apology. The chain of events shows clearly that the statement was made before there was any violence in Egypt to try and calm the situation. I think this speaks to Romney's unfitness to be a leader, to be a president. And his campaign said the reason that he said this was, we saw this thing happen, it fit with our campaign narrative, so we pounced. How low can they go?
He's not fit to be a commander-in-chief, David Blaska.
Boy, I tell you, it's a strict grader there. You know, I think I was going to say, you know, if right after we heard the Romney statement, I'm not sure I disagree with anything in that statement. I was going to ask Matt. You know, we can have a teaching moment. We can say, as Matt did, I think, in his prologue in the last question, we have a plurality of opinions. That's what a democratic country is, and that's what you've just gone through here. You decided you did not like Hosni Mubarak. You decided you want to have your own fate. Part of that is a discussion. There could have been a teaching moment there instead of this is one YouTube video. I mean, that somehow got circulated and apparently made the rounds in some of the campfires in the Middle East. But and again, let's not apologize for being Americans. And I think that Romney was also referring to, I don't know how many more world leaders our president's going to bow down to, but that there's a whole thought there that we have to apologize for success. We have to apologize for being Americans, for having different opinions. And I don't. And that's
what was the apology, though?
Well, the apology, I think it was. It came out from the Egyptian embassy that basically said, this is we don't mean to denigrate any religions and whatnot. And instead of saying this is one person expressing his opinion, and don't worry about it.
Matt?
Well, the whole apology trope that the right wing and Republicans and now David here, Blaska has repeated, is just not based in reality. President Obama has not gone around the world apologizing for the United States. He hasn't bowed to more leaders in the world than George W. Bush did in formal settings. I mean, this is just something that's confected. And, I wish the president of the United States would apologize more for the things that the United States has done wrong over the last 100 years. But this president hasn't been doing it.
It's pictures. So who am I going to believe? The pictures are your lying eyes, I guess. I mean, the pictures are, they're not photoshopped.
Yeah,
the President Obama bowing,
and George W. Bush did the same thing. That's what's ludicrous about it.
Let's take a call from Hugh in Milwaukee. Hello, Hugh.
Hi. I think the big news of the week is what's going on. 7 attacks on American soil by these fanatical Muslims, who in some ways were unleashed by Obama in his love of cheering of the Arab Spring. Even in the early days, the physical attack, the sexual attack on CBS reporter Laura Lang, it was clear from the beginning that there were going to be problems with this movement. Since they've come to power, you've had speeches by Muslim Brotherhood crowd demanding the extermination not only of Israel, but of all Jews.
Well, I'm going to hold you there, Hugh. Is this evidence of a failure of the Obama administration's foreign policy, Matt Rothschild?
Well, I don't think so. And I don't think I agree with David when he said, maybe there's not larger things to draw from this than what we're seeing at the beginning. I mean, Obama cheering the Arab Spring, who blames him for that? First of all, Obama was late to that cheering stand because Obama was standing behind Hosni Mubarak for quite a while. And actually, the administration hasn't supported the Arab Spring down the line. For instance, in Bahrain, the Kingdom of Bahrain has been repressing its protesters and its people. And the United States supports the Kingdom of Bahrain and actually supported Saudi Arabia, another kingdom, when it invaded Bahrain to help put down those protesters. Sure, any kind of liberation movement, as we saw during the Arab Spring, is going to have problems. But are we going to, here in the United States, a country that was founded on a revolution against a kingdom, going to oppose other people who are trying to, at least initially look like, fight for their own freedom? I mean, that's a question we need to wrestle with. Are we going to be for the forces of royalty and repression?
David?
No, I'm good.
All right, then let's go to Linda in Monroe. Hello, Linda.
Hello. Well, I think the attack on the embassy was a tragedy. I'd like to know who's trying to get us into a religious war where people are dying, and why the person that made this inflammatory movie isn't made public and jailed, because I think it's not good that any religion burns any religious books, the Bible or the Quran, and some people are even blaming the Jews for this.
Well, I'll jump in, because Matt's a good civil libertarian. I think he takes it to the point to where when you disobey unjust laws, you shouldn't be arrested.
No, I said you can get arrested, but us in public where we have some support.
But I hope that, you know, actually, I've always opposed flag-burning legislation against flag-burning, because people are burning a flag, they're doing me a favor. They're saying, I'm an idiot. Look, come and look at me. And that's what the folks, that's what actually some of the folks in the Solidarity Singers are doing, too, is I'm having a temper tantrum. I didn't get my way. I lost the election. Pity me, pity me. So in a way, they're doing us a favor.
So someone who does makes a video that is anti-Muslim should be jailed?
You know, no. Mm-hmm. I'm saying the exact opposite. Not at all. Mm. Look, Christians are one of the most persecuted majorities in America, right? You know, with the public media.
Mm, Matt?
Well, I don't see a ton of persecution going on there. But look, I totally disagree with David Blasick's characterization of the protesters in the Capitol. And I love those people, and I think they're doing the Lord's work in supporting our freedoms. I wanted to agree with David about free speech here. I mean, to jail someone for putting out a film? I mean, do we believe in the First Amendment in this country or not? I mean, people, as I said at the beginning, should be able to, you know, put out any film they want, publish any book they want, burn any flag they want. Let's live in a free society.
We need to take our break. Coming up, it's the Week in Review quiz, and we'll talk about other issues in the news this week, including more in the presidential race. The presidential campaign trail went through Wisconsin this week. Well, at least the vice presidential campaign trail went through Wisconsin this week. We'll talk about Paul Ryan and Joe Biden visiting the state and much more as the Week in Review continues here on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for the Week in Review quiz. The Guinness World Records book for 2013 was published this week, and one of this year's animal entries lives in Wisconsin. The world's tallest what lives in our state? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers that are called in or emailed in, and we will give the winner his or her choice of books that we have featured on the program recently. So again, the world's tallest what animal lives in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The answer and the winner at the end of the show. All right, well, in the news this morning, President Obama is expected to visit Wisconsin a week from tomorrow to raise campaign money and to hold a roundtable discussion. So the president is coming. We had vice presidential candidates this week, Paul Ryan in Green Bay, Joe Biden in Eau Claire. Looks like, David Blaska first, that Wisconsin is indeed a battleground state.
Well, it ought to be. I can't, you know, I'd be interested in Matt's opinion on this and yours too, Joy. I can't fathom anyone voting for Scott Walker and then turning around and voting for Barack Obama. And the turnout on June 5 of this year was tremendous. And Scott Walker won with 8%. So I would think Wisconsin is in play. Paul Ryan easily wins re-election in the first district, which, you know, I mean, it's got, you know, unionized cities like, you know, with Janesville and Racine and Kenosha. So, I would think that the state would be in play. In fact, I'm going to go so far, Joy, as to say that this is 1980 Redux. People forget, and I think I'm old enough to remember that it was a very close election between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter. Very close. History, you know, with hindsight of history, until that final week when the bottom fell out from under Jimmy Carter, who has had similar unemployment and bad economy numbers, when people said, we can't do any worse than this guy, let's try something new. And that's what's going to happen in November 6th.
Yeah, Barack Obama did win the state by quite a bit last time around, Matt. It's a lot closer this time.
Yeah, and those polls during the Walker recall did show that a lot of people who voted for Walker were favoring Obama. So I do think that Obama is going to win re-election. Wisconsin, I think, is going to be close, though. And I think it's going to be close because, first of all, the Republican get-out-the-vote machine is well-oiled and greased. I mean, we saw that in the recall. So you got Walker and you have Ryan. But even more important than those two is another person we haven't talked about all day, and that's Tommy Thompson. I think Tommy is a tremendous campaigner, the most natural politician the state has seen in 30 years. And I think having him out there will unite the social conservative right-wingers around Walker and Ryan with the traditional Republicans around Tommy, and that'll get people out. I think it's going to be close here. Here we have, the president and the vice president. All of a sudden, they have a GPS that works. They can find Wisconsin on a map.
I was going to say, thanks for the point about Tommy Thompson. Absolutely correct about that. And for the first time since 1957, since Joe McCarthy died of alcoholism, in 1957, Wisconsin will have two Republican U.S. senators. But that's a good point, Matt. I mean, when Barack Obama needs Wisconsin, he's here. But when your folks on Wisconsin needed him, it was flyover country.
Well, the
My question is, how much enthusiasm is there on the left for Barack Obama in Wisconsin? I'm saying not much at all.
There is real resentment lingering here in Wisconsin on the progressive base from the inability of the White House. Criminal inability on my part to support the workers here. I mean, Obama had said during the last election, wherever there's a strike, he's going to get his walking boots on. He didn't do it in Chicago. He's not doing it. He didn't do it in Wisconsin. And, people really here who are active, the hundreds of thousands of people who are active, the million people who signed those signatures, a lot of those people are not happy with the president. I do just want to add that I don't think the Senate race is a foregone conclusion. I think the more people see Tammy Baldwin, the more they are going to appreciate her. She's an incredibly decent person, very smart, works incredibly hard, has very high principles. And I don't think that race is over. But I do think Tommy gives Republicans a lot of energy and a lot of skill.
Well, I'll talk a little bit more about the Senate race in just a moment, but some are saying that Mitt Romney has decided to give up on Pennsylvania and some other states that requires Romney to win Wisconsin in order to win the presidency.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Again, I just want to kind of go back to what I said. The polls were very tight in 1980, Carter versus Reagan. Very tight until, I think it was Patrick Cadell was the pollster for Jimmy Carter, and there's photographs later, we didn't know the import, where you have a very dejected Jimmy Carter getting on the airplane, and he was told by his pollsters, it's over. That's what's going to happen now. So I recognize that the polls are difficult in Pennsylvania. Not sure why, and I'm not an expert on Pennsylvania, but it's a state very much like Wisconsin. It's Catholic, it's industrial, it's more populous. I think this thing is going to go because this Ben Bernanke yesterday basically said this economy is not going to improve very much. He's looking at unemployment rate of right now it's 8.1%. It's going to be 7.6% in another year. That's not much of an improvement.
Yet another poll came out, and I know there's a poll every other hour, but it showed the convention bounce continuing to grow or at least maintaining for President Obama. So, Matt Rothschild, what do you think of that?
Well, I thought all along that Obama's going to win unless there's some huge outside event that crashes in here. Obama's not Carter. He's a much more popular person. People like him a lot more. They like the First Lady. They don't like Romney, whereas they did like Reagan. So I think that that's a real problem for the Republicans. So unless the euro dissolves or unless Israel bombs Iran or unless the Middle East just blows up and these little wildfires grow into something much worse, I think the president is likely to win.
And David?
I disagree.
All right. What about I wanted to ask you, too, that Paul Ryan this week started running his ads in his congressional race against Rob Zurbin in the first congressional district. Does that mean that he's, hedging his bets, trying to protect himself in case he doesn't make it as vice president?
Well, I've got to give a shout-out to the Capital Times. They want him to do debates with Rob Zurbin, which would be a big boost I can't think of anybody that could debate Paul Ryan, come to think of it. But he is running for Congress, so he's on the ballot. By the way, running ads for Congress in Wisconsin certainly is not going to hurt his vice presidential chances.
Yeah, so it's a win-win-win-win. Well, in the U.S. Senate race, former Governor Tommy Thompson this week said it was a mistake for one of his aides to send an email with a video link to Democratic challenger Tammy Baldwin dancing at a gay pride event. And he said that his aide that sent out that email is still with the campaign, but in a different role. However, the Democratic Party says they don't think that's really the case, and they think that particular aide needs to resign. Matt Rothschild, your thoughts
on
that?
Well, I sure think the aide should resign. This is one of the sleaziest things I've seen in a while. And they released this email with text message, whatever it was, with links to this video with Tammy Baldwin at this parade just hours before Tammy Baldwin was going to give her convention speech. I mean, that was really tawdry. And the apology from Tommy Thompson came real late. And, you know, people who live in glass houses, and Tommy, you know, lives in a glass house.
Yeah, it's like those guys, you know, holding signs on the rotunda. I mean, they live in a glass house. I on my blog, by the way, it's ibwisconsin.com/Blaska. I said that was a mistake. It shouldn't have been done. On the other hand, though, I find it interesting that Tammy Baldwin, you know, she wasn't quite ready for prime time, but during the convention, they gave her a speaking role. She's going to talk about Midwest values, a good Wisconsin that she knows. She spoke to a convention that denied God three times. I mean, they got nothing on Peter there. You know, it's they booed God, and they never could. They had to have used Chicago-style convention procedures to get to reinsert the word God into the platform. So I don't know that she's positioned. Forget about Brian Nemor, the Thompson aide. I don't think she's very positioned to talk about Wisconsin values.
Well, she wasn't behind this effort either to...
that's her party. That's her party.
Well, then
that's her party.
Her party, you know...
Her party.
Her party railroaded that language in. I think the reason they were booing was not because of the content, especially on God, though I don't think it belongs in there either, and I'm an atheist and proud to say so, and I believe in the separation of church and state, but the other thing they were booing was, you know, railroading in Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and it was done in a totally undemocratic, in both senses of the word, way, so there was a real process problem there.
No, it's more than process. They didn't like the content, and that's why they resisted it. That's why they kept voting against putting God in the platform. It's a statement of beliefs, and it's basically God, a small g God. I mean, you know, it's higher being kind of thing. I respect your atheism. I do.
And I'm sorry, we have to leave it there because we're out of time. The answer to today's Week in Review quiz question, what is the world's tallest animal that lives in our state? It's a horse. Big Jake, an 11-year-old Belgian gelding from Poinet, was named the tallest living horse in this year's Guinness World Record book. So congratulations to Andrew, who is the winner of this week's Week in Review quiz question. He'll have his choice of books that we featured recently on the program. So apparently Big Jake is 6 feet 10 inches tall. The 2,600-pound horse eats a strict diet of 1.5 bales of hay and 40 quarts of oats per day. And I think I'll leave it at that. So, Matt Rothschild and David Blaska, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Joy, for having us.
Thank you, Joy.
Matt Rothschild, publisher of The Progressive Magazine. His website is progressive.org. David Blaska, former Dane County supervisor. His Bring It blog can be found at ibwisconsin.com/Blaska. There we go. All right. Thanks to both of them for being with us. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday, and we'll have More on state politics in our State Capitol Report from 7 until 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you.